For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that somehow registered two shots on goal last night against the Dallas Stars. It's time to do a little bit of stargazing. Mark, happy Friday.
Yeah, I'm feeling the turtle is coming back.
I mean, it came. It was after the Calgary game when Mason Marchment talked about parking the bus, and I had that, one of those like Kaiser Soze reveal moments where I just panicked and remembered all the bad times. It's just, oh my God, it's. I want to start, Mark. We are going to spend the next however long, just to put it in context, talking about a team that is third in the NHL with an 8.33 points percentage. So, like, whatever happens from here, just know that number. Like, cling to it. Lock it into your brain. This is a team that is securing 83.3% of the points that are available, has lost once in regulation. And still, though, we're making jokes about the number of shots they gave up to an Edmonton team that's won exactly twice. I mean, what the heck is happening right now, Mark? Just getting into it, right?
Well, they're winning a lot of close games. And up until this point, at least the Alberta stretch, they were winning close games because they were close games. And now that we've gone back to Canada, we're deciding that the close games need to be old school Dallas games where you get out ahead and then you turtle and you depend on your goaltender to save your cookies.
Now, and just for the sake of agenda, obviously we're going to talk about the games the team is currently playing, and then we're also going to jump and we'll do TV on the radio as well. We've got a couple of fun clips this week. So just to set the agenda, but coming back to your point, Mark, how much of that, looking at these past two games, do you think is a product of playing road games back? I think it's something like 7 games in 11 days, or, you know, they're after a very sparse start to the season, all of a sudden Dallas is facing a crush. So how much of that get a lead in turtle do you think is some, you know, new wrinkle that this team wants to roll out versus how much of it is the necessity of, hey, you get up multiple goals on Calgary staring at Edmonton the next night, of course you park it. And then you get up multiple goals against Edmonton second night of a back-to-back, you don't have the energy to not park it.
Yeah, it just struck me, especially in the Calgary game, that this was returning to old habits. And this is a team that is, you know, it's tried and true. This is a Dallas Stars team that has won turtling for several years. And they're kind of used to it. And it's a bit of a stretch to say, let's keep pushing and let's put the foot on the neck and make it work. I think that it's just an old habit. They've gotten into it. And for my heart's sake, I hope they get away from it.
Yeah, and I think they do as well. I think it's really hard to suss out because at 9 games, we're starting to get into a space where there is enough of a sample size to maybe learn a little bit. But we're also not quite there in terms of sample size to learn a little bit, right? But we've seen, you know, we've talked about the green shoots, right? So the first line, Hintz is back. Robo has been fully activated. Pavelski scored a beaut last night, right? So the first line seems to still be its typical cheat code self. You know, Thomas Harley looks, you know, we talked about him looking to be the real deal. And yet, right, this is a team just kind of looking through like they're kind of middling. You know, we talked about the point percentage, which is fantastic. But if you look at the possession stuff, your Corsi's and your Fenwick's and your expected goals and all of that, this is a team that grades out towards the bottom of the league right now. And it's not a huge margin. You know, it is early in the season. So it's, you know, 3, 4, 5 percentage points difference from where they sit to, you know, more of the upper echelon. So it's very much still a situation where there's some, you know, early season noise to filter out, and you expect they'll get it. Duchesne is scoring again. But I think we see, I've seen bursts. You know, let me put it this way. The thing that has concerned me a little bit is this team still feels like if you can get established in Dallas's zone and if you can lean on them a little bit, you can sustain possession, right? This team does seem to struggle regaining the puck and breaking out after a prolonged period of time when they haven't had it. And hey, that's most teams. And this team also still seems dead set on giving away, you know, odd man breaks, weird chances, kind of high percentage stuff, right? Those problems seem to be enduring right now.
Well, let me ask you a question. And here I'm poking around on Natural Stat Trick a little bit. What would you say the expected goal for percentage would be of the top line?
Of the top line.
Yeah, Robertson, Hintz, and Pavelski playing together.
Let's see. It's high. I'm thinking they started a little bit slow. They score a lot of. I'm thinking it's probably 55%.
48.76.
That is surprising. So they're actually conceding more than they're scoring. That's an interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I think some of that is defensive. They've given up some goals in areas where you wouldn't really expect them to, and so. There may be something sneaking in here where if you want to roll your top line out there, you're turtling a little bit because it's more of a 50-50 battle. And maybe you start thinking that you want to just suppress goals as opposed to going up and down and rolling the dice.
That's interesting. The other interesting thing about that to me is, so what was that percentage again one more time for those scoring at home?
48.76.
And the team itself is at 49.63, so that suggests somebody is outplaying that line right now.
Yeah, yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's the fourth line, to tell you the truth.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's them. It's now that they've actually started scoring. If we're talking about expected goals, it frankly wouldn't surprise me if it was Sagan's unit. Thinking about how many times they've hit the post, Mace has had a couple of goals wiped off for calls. And I don't quite know. They don't count towards XG, but just thinking about run of play, it certainly looks like that, you know, the Sagan Deshane pairing, whether it's with Dadonov or Delandria or Marchment lately scoring, which is fantastic to see. But it certainly seems like that unit is creating more consistent, repeatable chances, even if they aren't necessarily getting the end result all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a weird team in that they've been pretty predictable here over the last couple of weeks. Get off to a mediocre start, just absolutely floored in the second, and then it slows down a little bit in the third. And that isn't necessarily what we were expecting right off the shoot when we saw, okay, yeah, let's get up to a lead and let's just keep pushing pace in the third, and you know, we're a better team than they are, and so we're going to win.
And I think that is one thing that we're seeing right now, and credit to Jim Nill and Jim Nill's mustache, is one of the differences and one of the difference makers for this squad, I feel like, is the fact that in close games like this, having a talent gap can be a big benefit, right? We haven't yet seen a full game, where all four lines are rolling. But hey, like one or two, this team is so good that they, yes, in a perfect world, obviously they need all of their lines to be, you know, running. But this team is also good enough that if it's only the Ben line, if it's only the Sagan line, you know, they can get by and they can get results without that comprehensive performance.
Yeah, and here I'm, you know, in the background, I'm taking a look at some of these other lines. The Ben Johnston Dadonov line is even worse. You know, they're sitting here at 43.42. And interestingly, that they're suppressing, they aren't scoring nearly as much, and they aren't giving up nearly as much. So that's potentially something that's more interesting come the third period, if you want to take a little air out of the game. But again, it's negative.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only thing I suppose I can add to that is maybe some of this is reflecting the absolute disasters that we've had in the third period the last two games, because 10 games in, small sample size, a couple big turtles, and all of a sudden your stats look bad.
Yeah, I mean, that giving up, what, 20-plus shots in a period will certainly do that. But I also think it's not entirely unfair. On the one hand, you know, mad respect to sample size, and I get that you don't want to overreact to the outsized impact something like that can have. On the other hand, bro, you gave up 20 plus shots in a period. Like, maybe that should have the suppressing effect we're seeing on the performance. Because, you know, do good teams, do teams that supposedly have Stanley Cup aspirations, are those teams that should be going through stretches like Dallas went through in Calgary and went through in Edmonton?
Yeah, exactly. And just to finish it off here, you're absolutely right on Archmont, Sagan, and Duchesne. They're sitting at just under 2/3, 66% change.
And just to restate the obvious, that means that of all of the goals that are expected to be scored while that line is on the ice, they are expected to score 66% of those. Like that's the sort of production we'd expect to see out of the top line.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll have to pick a combo here and run the fourth line. I'm guessing the fourth line is probably slightly positive too. That kind of goes there. The other thing I'm fully expecting is that the way that Pete DeBoer has been deploying defense, I've seen a lot of the Hakanpaa-Lindell pairing in the third as we're turtling. So since they aren't really getting time in the regular course of play, that Lindell-Hakanpaa number is going to be disastrous.
How do we feel about that pairing? I mean, how do we feel about the defense? Because we've seen a pretty healthy amount of, like, there have been Harley plus Miro sightings this season. We talked last podcast about how we'd hoped Lundqvist was going to get on the scoreboard, and he finally did. Ryan Suter, right? We highlighted him making, you know, we've highlighted him not being at fault for a couple of things to this point. How do we feel about the defensive group through 9 games?
You know, I hate to say this, but and maybe we heard a little bit on the broadcast last night that, you may not have heard it. I heard it, is that Ryan Suter is down a little weight, and he's after a few games where he wasn't, he was kind of the Ryan Suter that we were expecting. Suter sneakily started to play good.
He started, you predictably cut out delivering that.
He's predictably starting to play fairly well.
Yeah.
And him and Miro together have looked fairly decent, and Harley's looked really good. Hakanpaa's been a little bit of a hot mess, but
I mean the goal last, and there's a little bit of keystone, a little bit of hard luck to it, but the Harley Hakanpaa goal against last night, where they both managed to fall down, was not the best look for either player.
as the puck barely slides into the net. Yeah, exactly. So but other than that, what Lundqvist, I would say, has been living up to expectations. Essa is probably living up to expectations, whatever your expectations are, whether those are good or bad. So
he is aggressively Essa Lindell.
Yeah, exactly. And so I would say that the defense is maybe a little bit better than expected, primarily because Ryan Suter's minutes are being put in a way that he can actually play to it. And still you have some downside there in that I think he jumps into play a little bit more than you might like if you're a big Miro Heiskanen fan, because Miro ends up getting caught in some positions where he might be facing odd man rushes because Suter gets caught up ice and he doesn't have the speed to get back. But for the most part, that pairing's been a solid pairing, and everybody else is kind of where you expect them to be or even slightly above. So I'm pretty happy with the defense.
Yeah, they're holding out. It does seem like we're getting a version of Suter right now that at the very least is sustainable, right? It's not a major problem. I will say, and this may be just purposely trying to make you mad. So Ryan Suter last season, his average time on the ice was 20 minutes, 23 seconds. Where do you think he sits through 9 games this season?
18 something?
19:47.
Okay.
So, which kind of the reason I bring it up is that as you're talking, I'm flipping through some stuff, and it actually kind of stunned me, because my impression as well was that they were doing a little bit more to moderate Suter. But then I looked it up and it's like, oh no, he's number three in total time on ice behind, you know, Miro is at 25, Lindell is at 20, Suter is at 1947, Hawk and Paw is at 1832. Then you get Harley, and Harley's at 18. So basically the defensive crew, you've got Miro at 25, then everybody else is around 20, and then Lundqvist is about 16. He's 1547. So that seems to be the way somewhat, the coaching staff balanced. Is thinking. Say again?
It's somewhat balanced, it sounds like. And so it's down a little bit reflective of the fact that he's not getting his power play time. But because we have Mason Marchment, he's getting a lot of penalty time. So that is what you get. And then Miro's way up there because he every once in a while gets offensive zone draws with Harley, which has just been working great.
Yeah. And I think as well, Miro gets the time because he's your best player, right? He's a 24-year-old number one, you know, top tier NHL defenseman. And those guys from time to time are going to play 25 minutes a night. He's, you know, 4 points in nine games, or sorry, 5 points in nine games, very respectable. And that's without any power play production. Sorry, two power play assists. I apologize. It's with some relatively limited power play production so far. So he's looked good. I think you're right. I wouldn't go so far as to say they've found some magical formula and the defense is all of a sudden a towering strength for this team. But I do think that they've figured out a way, like it's certainly not a liability. The defense is not why this team is struggling, in my opinion.
Right. Well, and they've also kind of realized that they have Jake Oettinger behind them most of the time, and Oettinger will clean up pretty much anyone's mess. Okay, one quick question here, since I had to know. Expected goals for percentage for Lindell and Hockenpah.
Oh man. I don't know the number, and just because this is the way the world seems to work, I'm going to guess that they're over 50%.
Wes, you were wrong.
Go figure. My thought process, Mark, was you couldn't possibly be asking me that question if they were doing what we expect, which is getting caved in. I did the whole, like, I overthought it, right? I said, okay, well, yeah. It can't be. The obvious answer is not great, Bob. But it can't be that because you're asking me. Therefore, they must be doing surprisingly well.
Well, it's not great, Bob, divided by two. So we're talking a skosh under 12.
Oh God! Wait, 12% of the goals expected on the ice. Like, my God.
Yeah. No. This is. I mean, we're talking limited minutes. So this is third periods in the last couple games.
I should hope their minutes are limited.
If those minutes
aren't limited, then DeBoer needs to be locked away. Not just fired, but get the man some mental help.
The Stars would not be 12.
That is unheard of. Lindell plays more minutes than anybody not named Miro Heiskanen.
The Corsi 4 percentage is slightly better at a little over 20. So, yeah, it's not been pretty.
So basically, whenever those two are on the ice, the other team has the puck and is probably expecting to score.
So, okay. But this is, yeah, we're talking about 13 minutes, and it's probably mostly in the last two games in the third period. So yeah. That's kind of what we saw.
Probably a healthy amount of penalty kill time where you'd expect it. So
this is all 5-on-5.
So,
yeah.
All right.
No simple breaks here because you have special teams going on. Their special teams number is probably better.
It can't be, it literally can't be much worse. It is hard for it to be worse.
Okay, now you're forcing me to run those numbers. But I'll do that in the background. We're going into Vancouver. Vancouver just scored 10 goals, right? So what do we expect now?
Not just cumulative.
They had a shutout, and they had an obvious challenge that they could have run, but they didn't challenge the San Jose goal because the mercy rule or something like that is what I read.
You know what? I'd be pissed at that if I was the goaltender. I would be legitimately like, come on, bro. We have a lead. We can take, you know, even if it's like a borderline call, I think like, hey, I've got a shutout going here. We've got more than enough of a lead to soak up a power play. You know, it's sort of that whole, like, at least give them a chance, right? Keep them in the game. It's like a guy's on two goals and you get a power play. He's on the power play unit hunting for the hat trick. I think just out of respect, you have to make a coach's challenge. I don't care if there's no cause to have the goal over. I think you challenge it anyway, just in case. Right. You got to keep him in the fight.
Yeah, no, I agree. But if you're going to put up a 10 spot, I saw a stat tweet that came out that at one point said that Vancouver had 10 five-on-five goals in this game, and San Jose had 9 so far this season. So,
Wow. I mean, it fits, when, right? Elias Pettersson is second in the league in points right now. He's got 19 through 10 games. Quinn Hughes is fourth, 16 through 10 games. JT Miller, all of a sudden, he's back to relevancy. He's sixth in the league in scoring. They've got, you know, they've got 3 guys in the top 10. They've got 4 guys. Brock Boeser has 13 points. 4 guys in the top 15. So this team, I mean, obviously scoring a 10 spot early in the season will inflate a lot of those counting stats, but hey man, they're coming.
Why are we going to San Jose instead of Vancouver, right?
Right. Is it too late to change travel plans? Maybe call the team's travel agent. I mean, you would have to just show up. You would have to add, if you wanted to outscore Elias Pettersson at this point, you'd have to add Dallas's first two. So Hintz has 11 points. Pavelski has 10 points. You'd have to do that. If you added Pavelski in the 2 spot and Jamie Benn in the 3 spot, you'd get 19 and get yourself into a tie to put it into context.
Well, the fortunate thing for San Jose is the Barracuda are, I think they might have 1 win so far this year too. So there's a whole lot in the tank down in the AHL.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's going to get worse in San Jose before it gets better. But
this is going to ultimately turn into a relegation story. So if ever there was a chance, obviously I'm reading Twitter too much. I think I saw something that said, doesn't San Jose know that Bedard went last year?
Maybe if they play badly enough, they can get him this year. The league will be like, you know what?
Yeah. Oops. We gotta punish Chicago for something. So Bedard. So, You're out to San Jose.
That's right. My goodness. Oh, well, is there anything else you want to touch on before we get into TV on the radio? Anything else going on with the old squad?
Oh, let's get some sponsor time in there, and then let's talk through some plays.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Mark, I cannot believe the Lindell pairing is that bad. Holy smokes.
I was wrong. The expected goals for percentage on the penalty kill is 3.9.
So 3.9.
They are a bit better at even strength.
At this point, it's just a poop emoji.
Yeah, exactly. But that's kind of, I don't know. Is that might be an expected number. I'm guessing that's an expected number for the penalty.
It honestly feels totally legit having watched the team so far this season. All right. Well, diving back in, we're going to stick with the gimmick. We've got a bonus play this week because mine was all of 20 seconds long and Mark couldn't decide. So we're going to get into it. We're dialing in on Calgary for some reason. We've got a couple selections there, which is nice. And Mark, what order do you want to take? I've sort of been driving the bus in that regard. So how do you want to handle this?
Well, let's start with yours, just because I might need to take a deep breath before I get into mine, since there's so much film to watch.
Yours might need an intermission.
It's all the same play, though. It's just different versions of the same play.
Yeah, and this is actually, we're following a narrative thread. So for those of you scoring at home, my sequence starts at 19 minutes and 8 seconds in the first period against the Calgary Flames. So first minute of the game, right off the bat. And the reason this jumped out at me was, you know, we've in a couple of previous clips, it was in the first time we did this, we focused on a goal against that initially looked like it was Ryan Suter's fault, but upon further investigation, it looked much more likely to be some kind of miscommunication on the cycle between Hintz and Haskin that left a player open, right? So we talked about what happened when things go wrong. I had the thought, well, hey, what does it look like when things go right? And this is one of those sequences. So Calgary breaks into the zone. Calgary gets possession, gets the puck into the corner. And from here, you've got pretty good Stars defensive pairing. You've got Hakanpää along the wall. got the defenseman in the slot. Everything is well under control. The puck gets rimmed around. I believe that it's Lindell, our friend Esa Lindell, the expected goals. The Flames play the puck more or less to behind Jake Ottinger's net. Lindell follows the puck carrier there, engages him physically, pins him against the wall. And the key to this play that makes a difference is Hakanpaa starts off outside. I mean, he's outside his faceoff circle when this kicks off. He's trying to seal off that wall, isn't quite able to get to that puck. So at this point, Hakanpaa's got one man over his back shoulder against the wall, comfortably against the wall, not in a scoring position. He's pretty much level with the bottom of the faceoff circle. What you see off screen is a Flame forward, and apologies, my eyesight's not as great. I can't quite make out the number, but you've got a Flame forward right between the faceoff dots, right where the right winger would line up on an offensive zone faceoff. Hintz is a few steps behind him, not in a position to engage. And you've got the puck rimming around the wall. So you're in a situation where for a split second, the Calgary Flames have actually managed to outnumber the Dallas Stars. They've got a guy beneath the net. They've got a guy on the wall at the bottom of the faceoff circle, and they've got a guy flush between the hash marks. So a pretty good spot. They don't have possession of the puck at this point. It's still kind of rolling up the yellow, but they're in a good spot. And, you know, we talked about the importance of communication, importance of positional awareness on the Hintz Haskinen goal. You know, they both ended up going to the puck, leaving a guy who ended up scoring against the Stars. In this instance, Hakanpaa seems to recognize what's happening. He sees the guy in the slot. He understands correctly that that guy is much more of a threat than the guy in the wall. And he does something exceptionally simple, which is take about three strides into the middle of the ice so that all of a sudden his forehand is between the player along the wall and the danger man in the slot. Combine that with Esa Lindell engaging. And so what Lindell does is engage physically to force the Calgary forward to make a quicker decision, right? He can't wait because he's about to be checked. What Hakanpaa does is read that, get into the passing lane, and all of a sudden what could have been an extraordinarily dangerous scoring chance turns into just about as simple a turnover and breakout as one could imagine. Of course, a few seconds later, Dallas messes it up and passes right back to the defenseman. There's a little bit of a confusion between Pavelski and Hintz, and they don't end up getting the puck out of the zone. So it's maybe like, let's call it, it's mostly a good clip, at least from the defensive side of things. It's a successful rotation. Hakanpaa makes a great positional read, puts himself in a position to snuff out a chance before it even turns into a chance. And then we get a tantalizing glimpse of how quickly things can fall apart when Hakanpaa moves the puck through the crease, gets it to his forward, Hintz, who is back at that point, gets it to Pavelski. Pavelski mishandles, makes a bit of a passes in a skate, so maybe free, maybe a little bit of a pass, but makes a blind backhander to where he thinks Hintz might be, and it turns over and they re-rack and do it all again. But anyways, wanted to highlight that because we talked previously about what happens when coverage mistakes leave guys open. This is what it's supposed to look like when proper coverage means nobody ever gets open and nothing bad ever happens.
Until you turn it over.
But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the defense.
Yeah, exactly.
That's one of the 12% of the time when they don't give up an expected goal.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering what, a minute or so into the game, what Hakanpaa and Lindell are doing on the ice at the same time. Stuff happens. Okay. Yeah, I like that.
Apologies. I apologize. It's even stranger. It's Suter. My site is, 20 versus 23, sorry.
Yeah, starts with a two.
Hey, but definitely was Hakanpaa, big old number two, rumbling through the crease. And it definitely was Hakanpaa making, again, he didn't get over aggressive. He stayed in his spot. He read the play. And all of a sudden, it was just a big old nothing burger. Which, as a defense, you want to be a guy that creates nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Saying good things about Ryan Suter again. So we're going to get typecast here.
He's making a comeback.
Okay, well, I like that. Mine is going to be the same game, except I'm going to the end of the third as opposed to the beginning of the first. So my clip is one that everybody probably remembers. With just a little over a minute left in the game, Calgary's pulled their goaltender at 6-on-5, and they get a slap shot from the blue line, and it's fed out a little to the side, And Hawk and Paw gets into a stick battle with Elias Lindholm, and the puck pops up in the air. Ottinger makes a save with his back, still trickling crease. And Esselindel uses his skate to keep it out of the net. And it pops it ultimately pops out to Matt Duchene, and he sends it down the ice.
Kick, so, save, and a beauty.
Beauty. Razor was all over this. So what I'm doing with my clips, and I have two clips here, one of which was the standard TV clip, and then there was, after this happened, a couple different views came out of what was actually going on. And in watching these clips, what I want you to do is, instead of following the puck, follow Jamie Benn. Because Jamie Benn is playing center here. And what he does up in the lead up to this is he's the one who's out there chasing the puck. So if the puck goes down the wing, he's going over, cutting that off. He ends up at the point a little bit. By the time the shot happens, he's kind of out of frame up by the blue line. And what you'll see is that as all this scrum is going on, Jamie Benn kind of nose downs and heads directly to the crease. And Esselindel makes his kick save, but Jamie Benn cleans everything up. And you take a look at his forwards. He's out there with Wyatt Johnson and Matt Duchene. Both of them are closer to the puck when the shot takes place, but it's Benn who's going in to clean things up. And they're more staying out on the side. So, for instance, even Duchene, as he's cruising in, Anafin cuts inside and gets pretty close to the scrum. And if the puck comes out, he's going to be in ideal scoring position. But let's follow Jamie Benn a little bit. And in the first clip, you can see that Benn goes into the scrum. But after you get familiar with that, take a look at the second clip.
I will say just before we move on to the second, sure. The first, it's not just aimless wandering either, I'm noticing. It's Benn is in coverage the entire time.
Oh, exactly. He's doing what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, he's staying on. He follows one forward as he drives to the net and then peels off only once talking about responsibility, right? That forward turns into, I think it's Hawk and Paw's defensive responsibility. So Benn leaves that and moves to the player in the slot. He's throughout the entire sequence, he's anticipating the play, and he's staying on his man versus just kind of wandering around and hoping something good happens.
Yeah, and he's doing this, I think, primarily because he's playing the center role, and the center role here is the one who's going to be pressuring the puck.
Yeah, it's much more defined. Your wingers are typically much more rigid in their responsibility to take their points, right? Their job is to cancel out a defenseman each, and the center's job is sort of rove underneath that and react as necessary, right? If somebody pinches, he pops out. If somebody's in the crease, it's Jamie's job to sort of react. Like the forwards and the defenders, or the wingers and the defenders, apologies, have more rigidly defined roles in this situation, and it's sort of Jamie's job to read what everybody else is doing and based on where they are to go where he's needed.
Right. And somewhat complicated by the fact that it's 6-on-5. And so there's an open guy out there at some point.
And I always feel like, and I have no stats to back this up, I always feel like 6-on-5, it's sort of like 4-on-3 and 6-on-5 are more chaotic than 5-on-4 because it's just a little bit more exotic of a situation.
Yeah, it's not something you practice all the time, that's for sure. Okay, let's kind of pop off to the second video, and you'll see two things in the second video. One of which is kind of a close-up of what's going on in the crease area.
Yep, and yeah, so it starts off with the defenders.
Yeah, we see, there's Hawk and Paw's puck battle over on the side. We see Essa come into the play, and we really don't see Jamie Benn come in until the end. But as we see Benn come in, There's a Calgary forward who's right on the post, and it's Connor Zary. He's had a great game, good rookie. Benn comes in, and as part of his motion in coming into the crease, he uses his leg to just absolutely take him out of the play.
Yep, leg, shoulder, and stick. Looks like
exactly, and so he completely throws him off balance and removes the threat from the opposite side of the net. And, my looking at Jamie Benn, that is an absolute intentional move on his part to clear that area of the crease.
And I would 100% agree. And I also think if you roll it just a little bit longer, he continues, he uses that, he's not just engaging with Zeri, it's he's coming after oh gosh, I'm blanking the there's another Calgary Forge 17, I believe. So right.
It's Shrangovich.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Lindholm on the far, you've got Lindholm on one post, Zeri on the other, 17 in the middle, and Ben's, if you look at his progress, he takes Zeri out of the play as you describe it, and in so doing, gives himself the angle to the puck to take it off the stick of the forward in the middle. So he manages to nullify two players and get the puck clear off of that sequence.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so Essa's making his play with his foot, and he's getting all the credit. But Ben's coming in, clearing out an entire side, and then he's the one who's engaging with the puck after Lindell stops it from going into the net. And because of his stick, then he takes Shrangovich out of the play and is able to pop it out to Duchesne, who can make the clear.
Because they score without Ben doing that. Lindell's play is a footnote, because it's a fantastic heads up defensive play. You know, Lindell, correctly in my opinion, Lindell gets between Zeri, like Lindell reads Ottinger challenging that puck, and Lindell does a very good job, I think, stepping between Zeri and the net. And so Lindell puts himself in a position where, you know, without Lindell there, Zeri has a tap in, because Ottinger has, you know, moved to that post, made the save, gotten twisted. The puck is behind him. The puck is, you know, there is nothing between the puck and the net, and nothing between Zeri and the puck, until Essa Lindell takes a step back. Lindell steps into the blue, not just to block the puck, but he steps in front of Zeri, but he kind of has to abandon him, right? He can't just cover Zeri, because there's more skaters there, and the puck might get in on its own. So I think part of what I love about this is you've got Lindell making a desperation read. Hey, I have to stop this puck from going in, and I can't really devote much concern to what happens after that. And then you've got Ben making a great read that says, hey, Essa just stopped this puck from going in, but there's two more guys that are in a position to score very easily. I'm just going to two on one. I like those odds. Right.
Yeah. I mean, Ben is just coming in and going into the muck and winning battles. And I think that's primarily what I want to show here, is that, you know, in the course of play, as you're watching, Lindell's getting, you know, appropriately kudos for his play with his skate and keeping the puck out of the net. But it's really then Jamie Benn who's the one who makes this a much less dangerous situation.
Yeah.
And the second part of that second clip is just an overhead view of the exact same thing, which gives you kind of a better idea or feel for what Ben actually does to Zeri over on the wing with his leg and knocking him off balance. Ben is a defensive beast on this play, and he got absolutely no credit for it.
Yeah, he gets, we fixate on the offense, obviously, but this to me is every bit as much of the value of Ben as a, you know, power forward on this team, and using his body, using his skill, like this has everything, right? It's size, it's skill, it's smarts. It's just a fantastic hockey play.
Yep.
I have bonus points though, and credit where credit is due. At the very, very start, to instigate this entire thing, Lindholm does one of my all-time favorite power forward moves, and not just power forward, because I remember Brett Hull used to do this a lot, the old cross-check push-off. So
yeah, he shoves Hockenpah into the crease in front of Ottinger.
Yep. But a lot of times you'll get away with that. And it's the thing that I like about that as a, you know, as a hockey watcher, and as much as I hate that the other team did it, is sometimes I think when people, and I'll find a Pavelski example for coming up, because he's obviously a Hall of Famer built on this. I think that sometimes people mistake guys that are good net front as, I just get to the top of blue and stand still. Whereas the real elite net front guys are the ones that do exactly what Lindholm did to start the play, which is, yeah, he starts off flush, obviously in contact, he's cross-checking the guy, but he starts off flush with Hockenpah, and that's not what creates the opportunity. What creates the opportunity is he backs up about 3 feet, gives himself room, and makes something happen. And so I hate seeing it happen to the Stars, but it's worth watching the instigating incident, because it's that really good, you create content, you anchor your defender, and then you find a way to back out of the situation, and all of a sudden you've got a little bubble of space where you can make a play, get a shot off.
Yeah, and you know, this is one of the areas I think that you can also say that because of Hockenpah's size, it pro- probably worked out a little better for the Stars than it would have against a smaller, slighter player. Because Hakanpää kind of holds his own a little bit and is able to get back into that play and ultimately engage Lindholm's stick over on the side of the net instead of getting completely knocked off his rails.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, the flip side of that, though, is maybe if he's smaller and he gets hit and goes down, it might end up a penalty.
True, but what one minute left after the Stars were turtling the whole time. I'm pretty sure the refs had those whistles exactly where you'd expect them.
With good reason. I don't think the referees have any had any desire to call much of anything. Yeah, it was a good. I love those two plays, and again, this is also a good testament to, in some sense, the risk of the turtle, because it took two. And I'll throw Ottinger in there as well, because that initial kind of flailing over my back save, right? It took two, if not three, very high IQ, high skill, you know, read the moment plays for Dallas to avoid giving up a goal in that sequence. It wasn't just one thing. They needed all three to happen in sequence to avoid getting scored on. And that's the danger of the turtle is it's really difficult. And that's why you'll see the statisticians will know this and are nodding along. That's why, you know, you get really worried about teams that do exceptionally well in one or two goal games, because that's the stuff that is really hard to rely on. And as much as you can say that Jamie Benn is an elite player, and as much as you can say that Lindell has a reputation as being a great defender, and as much as you can say that Ottinger is one of the great up and coming goaltenders in the league right now, it's still really hard to expect them in a, you know, 20-second clip every single time to make sure that, you know, Ben takes two guys out of the play, Lindell stops a puck on a goal line, Ottinger makes a you know, frantic save to kick it all. Like that's hard to do repeatedly. And the best way to prevent it is just not wind up in that situation in the first place.
And to tell you the truth, the other thing I'd kind of like to know about this is, you know, you notice how Duchesne and Johnston kind of cruise into the play and hang out on the periphery. I'm kind of interested in understanding how that's coached, because they both reacted the same way, and it's very likely that they're playing their role there, and Ben's role is to get into the scrum like that, playing the center position. So I think that's an interesting sidelight that you know, you can talk about hockey IQ and how players do things instinctively, but they're also working within a system, and it's not complete chaos. And so they're reacting and doing smart things within something that's been set up for how they're supposed to react.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point, right? It's not shinny. These guys aren't just cruising around. They've got specific spots and specific assignments, and they might freelance outside of that. But yeah.
All right. You ready for a goal fest on Saturday night?
I mean, I hope that it's a good goal fest, but we're going to find out. It's an interesting test for the Dallas Stars. You know, they're, again, we've talked about all of this in the context of an 8.33 points percentage. Vancouver's right behind them at 750. They're level on 15 points. The difference is Vancouver has played an additional game. They lost it, but they played an additional game. You know, things that we normally look at, the goal differential is a big indication of team quality. Vancouver is a best in conference plus 24. Dallas is plus 6. Caveat being, you win a game, you know, you score a 10 spot, that pretty significantly changes your total within a 10 game sample size. So, you know, maybe Vancouver is a juggernaut. We've just not seen it, but the teams are pretty well matched. Dallas is 7-1-1. Vancouver is 7-2-1. Right. There's not a lot separating those teams outside of that one, the one blowout for the Canucks. So I think we'd looked at this road trip as a really interesting early season test. And I'd say, you know, B plus for the Stars. They've got the wins, they've scored the goals, they've had some lapses and made it tougher than it needed to be. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think if we didn't have such high expectations as fans going into the season and having Stanley Cup conversations that involved the Stars, that everybody would be very happy.
I think time of the year matters too, right? If this was February, right? Inching up on the playoffs, the dull, you know, the team is haggard late season. I think if this was February, you'd look at the way that Dallas started this stretch of games and think I think you'd be thrilled, right? They played two lengthy road trips against, a couple of teams, and they got two wins. They were able to use their backup goaltender for one of those wins. Like, I think there's a lot positive to take away, but your point about expectations and about early season, it's sometimes hard to see that.
Yeah, and 6-1-1, points are accumulating. At this point, we probably have more points than San Jose is going to get all year, so we've eliminated one team. Oof. So yeah, it's at this point, it's about getting the points and how you get there. Not so much as long as you're making improvements and getting a better identity with your team, or at least understanding the identity of the team. And at this point, what are we, about 12% into the season, 10-12% of the way into the season?
So.
There's a lot of points that have been available. Dallas has accumulated most of what they could get. And no, they haven't looked perfect on the ice, but it's a work in progress. And there's all the pieces have at least stood up and performed at some point.
And you see glimpses, right? Marchman has had a couple really strong offensive games. Duchesne looks right now, and it's 9 games, but he looks like the perfect co-pilot for Sagan's line right now. And I know Sagan is a little bit, he's only got 4 points, and there's not a lot of tangible production yet, but those two look dynamite offensively. But
the thing I will say about Duchesne, he kind of looks like the kid in the candy shop at this point.
Yeah.
I think he's very happy with his decision to give up a few bucks and come to Dallas.
I mean, if this performance level holds, even if he doesn't get any better than he's playing right now, he's going to make a lot of money this offseason, and he's going to get to choose where he goes. And yep. I think he gives them such a different element. He's quicker. He's more of a threat skating, I think, than Sagan is at this point. He's a clever passer. Like, he can finish. He's just, those two seem to mesh well, and you're throwing, we've seen Marchment score a couple of goals. Dadnoff's played well. Like, you can throw whoever you want next to him, and they're going to get chances.
Yeah. Now, I would say that at this point, the Stars are, in standing wise, they're better off than I thought they would be. And performance wise, maybe they're a little worse than I thought they would be. But those are just very minor points. I don't think you can be a Stars fan at this point and not be pretty happy.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Whatever ground you lose in thinking that you would have liked to have seen a higher standard of performance at this point is more than made up for the fact that, like, at the end of the day, you can say that this is a good team that made significant changes and is managing to accumulate points at an 83% clip while they figure it out, right? And that is much better to me than a team that's playing well. I'd much rather be making that claim than be sitting here saying, well, the results will come.
Right, exactly. Because the points go in the bank and they don't come out.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, doesn't matter how badly you play. And you know that they matter now. The points you accumulate now count in the standings the same as the points. The whole notion of being good down the stretch, well, it matters early too.
Yep. All the games count the same until you get to the playoffs, and they count the same, but they're different.
We'll see. What's your prediction for the goal fest in Vancouver? A shutout, right?
you've determined, you figured out my way of picking. They have tough times in Vancouver, don't they? Don't they go eat, run up a big check on Gallardi's tab, and then watch Vancouver just pop them?
Yeah.
I tend to try and get rid of bad memories, and there's holes in my memory.
It feels a lot like Calgary in recent years. Like, weird stuff always happens in Vancouver.
Yep. So, you say Besser's on a roll, Pedersen's on a roll. So they'll find somebody very odd is going to show up and throw a hat trick out at Dallas, and we'll wonder what happened. But at the end of the day, the worst case scenario is it's 4 out of 6 points on the road trip, which is a successful road trip. And I think it'll probably be a pretty entertaining game, so I'll stick with that.
All right, I'm actually going to go the opposite direction. I just have a gut feeling that this is a situation where I think this is the game the team has circled on the road trip. And I think they got through Calgary, and they got through Edmonton without any, you know, serious mishaps. And I think that this is an opportunity for this team to kind of show what they want to be this season. And I think that we are going to get a team that looks at Vancouver's recent success, the 10-goal victory, you know, Besser and Pettersson and all those guys flying high. And I think this is going to be the first time this season where Dallas kind of puts a marker down and says, yeah, but you're not in our class yet. Hold on. I think this game is Dallas sending a message that they are in the, you know, the upper echelon of the NHL. They deserve to be, and kind of putting the league on notice, like, Hey, young whippersnapper, young upstarts, let's slow down a little bit before we consider ourselves in the same class.
I like it. I'm changing my view. I'm going with yours.
And again, it's more that, again, I think that the Sagan unit has been playing very well and hasn't had a lot to show for it. The power play is showing signs of life. The defense has been better than we think. Robertson's got, after for him, a muted start, is back to, you know, you get to the end of the night and he's got 2 points, right? Hintz is on fire. Pavelski scored. Like, stuff is starting to come together. And so I just think this is going to be one of those early season moments where it all kind of coalesces and the team makes a statement.
I like it.
Yep. There we go. So that's that. Mark, thank you as always for your insight. KT, for your hard, tireless work behind the scenes. We will, I think this one's going to go live before the game. So hopefully I am talking to you out in radio land before we know what happens. It'll make our predictions even smarter. But otherwise, thanks for listening. Please don't forget to download, to like, to subscribe, do all the things. Funnel us your feedback. We're happy to hear from you, and we will talk soon.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.